The following Real Assets Advisor podcast is a production of its parent company, IREI, Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a complimentary subscription to Real Assets Advisor Newsline and Magazine. Curious about real estate, infrastructure, energy, commodities, alternative investments, or real assets in general? Real Assets Advisor is curated intelligent news, data, and insights to suit your needs. Visit realassetsadvisor.com and sign up today using our new chat feature.
Welcome to the program. Our guest is Spencer Robinson. He serves as professor and director of real estate at Central Michigan University. He's also co-editor of the Journal of Sustainable Real Estate. He consults, researches, speaks, and serves as an expert on real estate and sustainability topics. Recent piece of research he did was taking a look at the relationship between good schools and apartment rents. So we'll have a little conversation about what that research has turned up. Spencer Robinson, welcome to the program.
Mike, thank you. I'm really happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to talk about this topic.
I mean, on the one hand, we've known for a long time that if you have a good school district, single-family homes are priced higher. People seek that, and realtors will cheat by saying that it's in such a home is in such a district or area, and actually it's, you know, borderline. I would imagine that apartment rents aren't all that different, but maybe your research has found that, I mean, historically have apartment rents, and I don't know if you've got history on this or this is just strictly contemporary research. Let me ask the basic question. What's the relationship between good schools and apartment rents?
Honestly, to my knowledge, and then this work is co-authored with Jeremy Gabe at University of San Diego and Andrew Sandiford at University of Virginia. To the best of our knowledge, no one has actually studied the capitalization of school quality in multifamily before. There was one recent study by Barath and Hardin, which was, again, to my knowledge, one of the first using rental, and they use single-family home rentals. But you would expect there to be a analogous relationship to single family homes and that school quality should matter. But given life cycle and the composition of renters, we'd also expect some differences that I'm sure we'll get into as the discussion moves forward.
Well, what constitutes a good school district? How do you discern a good school district? So, where do you go for that information? What's the yardstick?
There are lots of different ways that we can measure school quality. The data provider for our school quality measures was greatschools.org, and we certainly appreciate their help. And for multifamily, apartments.com from CoStar was able to provide us with data. And then to figure out what school district someone was, Home Junction gave us data on school zones. So great schools, you'll see on a site like apartments.com, the great school's top score, which is typically a 1 through 10, and that incorporates a bunch of different underlying measures. We could broadly put them into three categories, and those would be input, output, and growth measures. So an input measure is what type of resources are going into the school. So we could think of things like student-teacher ratios. What is the spending per pupil by the school district? So what resources are going into the school is an input measure. Output is what we typically see the most of, and in part because the data is easiest to get. Output is what student output can we observe, and most specifically, state-administered test scores are the most common measure. And although they're a little bit different than value-add, they are typically longitudinal, so we have larger samples over time of what output measures are. And then the last major measure would be the value-add measure. And what a value-add measures is the change in the student performance from year to year or beginning of year to end of year rather than the nominal school achievement. So in other words, you may have a district that overall is not as academically high-performing as another district, but perhaps they do a great job of moving their students from point A to point B and progressing them at a faster rate than maybe a district that has stronger overall student body. So it captures how well the district is doing and achieving the student-based goals.
So just quickly, the result of these of the research shows that what's the relationship between rents and good school districts?
It is absolutely a rent booster if there are school for higher school quality. We observe higher multifamily rent.
And what's the boost on that? Like percentage wise, can you give us a sense of the percentage increase?
So I'll first give you kind of the overall is about 2%, 1.5 to 2% for a point change in a grade school's ranking. So going from, you know, a 9 to 10 or an 8 to 9. Now, one caution on the econometrics is we don't necessarily observe what's exactly the difference between a 7 and 8 and an 8 and a 9. We know on average a 1 point move is 1.5 to 2%. This is this is a little bit less than we find in a single family. The single family magnitudes are a little bit bigger, but from kind of the top line, the overall score, about 1.5 to 2%.
Is one of the reasons this has not been researched before because when I think of a good school district, I think of just a swarm of single family homes that it's surrounded by single family homes, and apartments tend to be in other areas. And we've seen the whole apartment industry just explode. I mean, it's been just the hottest property type, that and industrial, for years running. Has it encroached? Now, I don't want to use the word encroached really because it sounds like an invasion or it's a negative, but are apartments suddenly much more prevalent around good school districts than they have been in the past?
Broadly answering your question, there are a few trends that might be impacting how multifamily and what the relationship between multifamily and schools are. You know, we know that on average, they're different residents. But the average multifamily resident stays about 3 to 4 years versus 10 years in a home. There's a lot of what we call life cycle literature. And, you know, part of this is kind of the complexity of taste and preference among households during different stages of their life. In many areas, apartment residents tend to be in earlier life phases, potentially with younger children. And if we look over the past, say, 10 years, we've had one of the demographic population bulges in the U.S. has been in that younger life cycle. So we might see more of them in multifamily just by nature of the demographics of our country.
You know, when you say 1.5%, I think that's one of the figures you gave a range. It doesn't sound like a lot. Is that, if you say, if you build in a good school district, you're going to get 1.5% higher rent. Am I selling that short? Because it doesn't sound like a big increase.
Well, when you look at that 1.5 to 2% increase in rent, and then you capitalize that at 3 to 4%, then we're starting to get bigger impact on the bottom line. And if we look more specifically at the differences between the primary, elementary, and high schools, we can see a little bit of difference there in that the primary schools tend to be, for multifamily, a higher premium than the high schools, which is kind of contrary to what we find in much of the single family literature.
So what is the, did anything about the research surprise you, or did you get the outcome that you were kind of expecting to get? What is the takeaway for you or the surprise for you in the final analysis?
You know, I won't say I was going into the research with any particular expectation other than that we would find multifamily had some degree of school quality capitalization, which we did. I think a few of the interesting things we found were this life cycle difference, where primary schools had greater impact than secondary schools which speaks to that, you know, phase of life that people are in. We also found that the growth measure was statistically significant and meaningful, whereas in prior literature that's been very mixed. As you recall from earlier, the growth measure is how much a student increases their learning from point A to point B, from the beginning of year to end of year. And a few notes on this measure is it's much more common in elementary schools than it is in high schools. You know, for those of you with young children, you will often see those reports from your children. You know, here's what their scores are in the beginning of the year. Here's the expectation of what they're supposed to be at the end of the year. And here's where they showed up. Those are less prevalent in high schools. And part of that's just the nature of the content that they teach. But a couple of the reasons we might have found it significant here as opposed to some prior research is, first, the preference for multifamily in this primary schools may weight that a little bit because that's where most of that data is coming from. And another kind of interesting difference, and again, to the kind of complexity of the market and tenure choice, you know, roughly 40% of housing in the U.S. is multifamily as opposed to single family. The switching cost to move from an apartment to another apartment is quite low relative to the switching cost of moving from a single family home to a single family home. So if you are a parent and are able to go observe or even hear from a colleague the great things that a school district is doing, and it's a couple miles away, if you're in an apartment, it's not a huge transition cost to go switch school districts and be in that district that might better serve your child. Whereas if you're in a home, moving a home and selling it and the realtor costs, transition costs are much greater. So I think we see that playing out in this growth metric that it makes it a little bit easier for parents to chase better schools in multifamily than in single family.
Interesting. What about differences between parts of the country, between regions or states? Were you seeing any distinction there, or is it pretty much... the results are pretty much peanut buttered across the United States that way?
We looked at differences across major regions. We just primarily looked at the West, Midwest, Northeast, and South. And there's a number of prior literature that has looked at those regions as well. And we found similar, but in this case, actually, some greater magnitude of results, where the Midwest had the lowest impact for schools. The South had the second lowest, and then the Northeast by far the highest, and followed by the West. And if you take a step back and think about why that might be, if you look at the highest overall impact was in the Northeast, that's where you're going to have the highest percentage of parents living long-term in multifamily. As you get into cities like New York and Boston and the cost of living increases relative to wage earners, and have more families raising children through the entire life cycle in multifamily. Whereas you go into the Midwest, which is, you know, land rich and housing costs are significantly lower in most areas, then the tenure choice, people having the option to switch from a rental to a buy, they're able to do that with a lot more relative ease in a Midwest region than they are in the Northeast. So we see lower importance of this school quality, and particularly as we get into the high school, of the multifamily in areas where it is easier to switch into a single family ownership.
So what do you think the message is to the multifamily real estate investor?
I think the message is that school quality is one of the many factors to consider. You know, there's lots of research, some of my own out there, talking about the multitude of different neighborhood effects and building location effects. And you know, the multifamily investment community is incredibly sophisticated and, you know, uses all of the latest, greatest tools. So I wouldn't want to overstate the results that this is, you know, groundbreaking, but I would emphasize that school quality is definitely a consideration, and particularly in areas with strong primary schools, that we might find a higher degree of families gravitating to that. And I guess there's one other sort of step up takeaway, is that if you're building in an area with really great schools, then perhaps the demographic you want to attract are families with young children. And as we're deciding on the amenities and the nature of the physical space, that might be a demographic that you design towards in areas with higher schools, because we've been able to demonstrate that it matters, and particularly in the West and Northeast, more supply-constrained housing areas.
Let's talk about school choice in states. Certain states have different rules around school choice. Was that a variable?
What school choice means is that in certain states, regardless of where you're geographically located, a parent has the option of enrolling their student into any school that is geographically accessible. And there's some limited research on how that affects single family. We tested it here in multifamily and found that independently, being in a school choice state doesn't affect multifamily rent. So that doesn't, you know, matter on its own. But when we combine that with the school ratings, the non-choice states, or states where being in a specific location 100% includes the school amenity, were about 30% greater premium than in states where there was school choice. We could live outside the school district boundary and still potentially put your child into that school district. But it kind of speaks to, you know, the geographic impact of schools and how that lessens when those boundaries are widened.